Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to Applause Radio Show. I'm Joanne Barton. I hope everybody's doing well. My apologies for our show from September 1st with Janisha Adams-Ginyard. We had a hell of a storm here in Jersey, and first we lost power, then we had water in the basement, and unfortunately we had to cancel the show. I need to reach out to her to reschedule, so my apologies for those of you who did tune in for that show. We never went on the air with it and never broadcasted it, so I apologize. But tonight, man, we've got some kick-ass music for you. I'm telling you, amazing super group that to me is totally underrated and never got the credit they deserved. Tonight with us, we have Jimmy Waldo from Alcatraz and also Blackthorn. And oh my God, with the music we're playing tonight, wait till you hear it. So I believe I have on the phone with me, Mr. Jimmy Waldo. Jimmy, is that you?
It's me, Joanne. How are you?
How are you, sir? Everybody, welcome Jimmy Waldo. My goodness. Jimmy is the keyboardist from Alcatraz and Blackthorn. And I keep saying Blackthorn. I don't know why, honey. I don't know why. I get Tourette's sometimes. I get some weird things going on. But Blackthorn, and how I could forget to say it. I mean, my goodness. Well, first of all, how are you? Are you good?
I'm good. I'm fine. I'm just working away here in Chicago.
Nice.
Yeah, it's great. I'm doing good. I'm rehearsing, getting ready to. Alcatraz is going to England, the UK, do the UK in November. So I'm
cool.
Doing my homework. So when we all show up at rehearsal, hopefully I sound like I know the songs.
Well, nobody's going to know the difference, honestly, unless they're a musician. Those are the only people who can tell a difference.
Right. I'm just real picky about it. I just try to make it as close to perfect as I can, and then I know it'll be acceptable.
Of course. Well,
it won't be perfect,
My goodness. I mean, I was listening to what was sent to me, and the choices to play, I just couldn't believe it. I mean, honestly,
wow.
The band Blackthorn was a super group, and I don't understand why Blackthorn wasn't more popular at the time. And the new releases, the music is from the 90s, I'm guessing, right? Around the 90s?
Yes. Yeah, 93-ish. it was, you know, what killed us was when Bob and I wrote the music, we just thought, man, we're going to write some. It was all about the songs. And I believe you're a songwriter, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, I am, yes.
So you understand. And, I mean, it was all about the songs with us, like being heavy and a great band, and it's got a great drummer and all this stuff. That's all nice. But if you don't have good songs, it doesn't matter who's playing it. So
exactly.
We worked really hard on the songs. So by the time we got all the songs together and started recording, we felt great about the record.
Mm-hmm.
And then we realized, though, that the grunge thing had happened, and
yeah,
it was kicking our ass. So we got our ass kicked by that.
Yeah.
And I liked a lot of the bands that were out. You know, it wasn't – I didn't dislike Nirvana. I liked some of the songs. But it was all about them, and what we were doing was considered just rock.
Right.
You know, so we fell into this void, this crevasse.
And
so certainly in the United States. And then we got the deal started in Japan. So we got a really generous advance from Japan and a publishing advance, and that was all good. And Graham and I and Bob went to Japan just as a threesome, just to do a promotional thing. We ended up doing a lot of acoustic shows over there, and which went fantastic. We were received great. People really treated us great because we'd been there before in different bands, you know, and so they knew who we were. And we came home, and we thought, wow, at least we're going to do good in Japan. We'll tour. We'll go back and tour, you know.
Yeah.
And Frankie and Chuck were on board with that. That would have been a no-brainer. It would have been great. The record didn't sell in Japan either. So it didn't do anything in the United States. It didn't do anything in Europe, and it didn't do anything in Japan. So it was really, just wrong place at the wrong time.
That's what kills me. I mean, the music industry, as you know, has always been cyclical. Yes, it's changed, but it always comes back, and it's not coming back. I don't know. We're stuck with this shit. Not that it's bad music. It's just not my music, okay? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
But, you know, there's so many people out there who love rock, who love heavy metal, who love hard rock. That's why I'm confused on... After listening to a few of the songs that was sent to me, I mean, I'm confused as to saying if it's really metal or if it's just hard rock, you know, but it's so borderline to heavy metal to me. I mean, when I hear heavy metal, I picture, you know, where you don't understand a freaking word they're saying, and it's just ding, 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 you know, the music is just crazy, you know, but I mean, the music is palpable, and you can enjoy it, and it's just fabulous. And you're right, it's at the wrong place in the wrong time. I just wish that would make a radio station or just something that is geared towards what we like, you know?
Yeah.
Remember Top 40, you know?
Yeah.
A mix of
everything. And, you know, and now... It's like I'm not a hater, and I like all kinds of music. I've done a lot of different kinds of music and stuff like that. I'm not a, you know, I only like what I play or write or whatever. But a lot of what I hear out there now, I really don't like. I just don't like it. And I won't even go into what genre I'm talking about or anything like that. It's just stuff that I just don't like. And when you listen to, okay, so I listen to this genre, and I go, wow, don't like much of that. There's not, I think a lot of that is crap. And then you listen to another genre and you go, wow, there's one good song out of 10 or something. Mm-hmm. And that's what frustrates me. We can't tour in the United States, Alcatraz. We do nothing in the United States. Mm-hmm. We do okay in Europe and the UK and different everywhere else in the world. But, not in the United States. Over there, it seems that they can handle. Like in England, we'll play a club in England. Like there's a club we play in Wales, and it's a rockin' club. I mean, it's all about heavy metal bands, heavy bands. But upstairs, the upstairs was closed. It was like a big club, but it was closed. Mm. So we were up there using that for kind of a dressing room. Thing that was a real dressing room, and then we come out and just hang out and sit in this empty club before we go downstairs and play. And one night we got off stage, we go upstairs, and there must have been 300 teenagers up there, no drinking, no bar, listening to Buddy Holly, name it, old 50s and 60s dancing to Beatles.
Cool.
Teenagers. 16, 17, 18-year-old kids. So, I couldn't help. I asked the owner of the club. I said, "What's this all about?" And he goes, "Oh man, people love this stuff." And he goes, "We thought we'd try it. We tried it, and it was overwhelming. It was so successful." So they had a DJ spinning records. So it seems like everywhere else in the world, there's all kinds of music, and rap and hip hop is I don't know about big, but it's certainly there. I mean, we play the hard rock in Oslo, And again, we're playing downstairs in about a 500 seat room, a bar, and upstairs there's like a hip hop thing going on. Two DJ guys doing like a hip hop thing, and people are dancing their ass off, having a great time. So that coexists, you know. And
yeah,
here
well,
in
what
States,
a mix! What a mix in the hallway when it's all over, though. The two clashes of
well,
the different people.
No, you know what? Yeah, no, but no problem at all.
Oh, I
no
know, I
know. Problem
I'm just
at
kidding.
All.
It's just,
right.
Culture
but you're right,
shock.
Boy, that
you know
sounds kind of scary. Yeah, culture shock. I'll say.
Yeah.
But ironically, I think you're in New York, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. We played a club in Queens. And I always – great club. And I just – the name escapes me for some reason. This is stupid. But anyway, this club is rocking. And it's like we're in another country playing in there. I mean, 50 people. But nonetheless, it was just these people were into what we were doing. And but you come out of that club, and it's a different world. You know, it's just
right.
You know,
right.
Back to disco.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It really is. Now when I mentioned earlier to everybody, for those who don't know who are listening, Blackthorn really, really was a super group. I mean, Graham Bonnet was lead vocals, and for those of you who don't know, how you couldn't know, Graham is from Rainbow. Guitarist Bob Kulick, oh my God, rest in peace. Bob recently passed, yes?
Yes, he passed about a year or so ago.
Yeah, I thought so. You know what? You know what confuses me about that, Jimmy? Sorry, I don't mean to go off the subject.
We
had a gentleman, Bob Kulick, on the show, and he was from The Happenings, and everybody thought it was Bob Kulick from Blackthorn.
You're kidding.
Yeah, it was so funny. Yeah, it was so funny. And we're like, no, wrong Bob. But Bob is just an amazing guitarist. They play with Kiss, Meatloaf, I mean,
yep.
You name it.
Yep.
And Jimmy, yep. Of course. And then, you know, I didn't know that you play with Quiet Riot, which is pretty cool. And Frank, well,
yeah,
of course, Frank Finale and Chuck Wright.
Yes, that's how I met Frankie. I went down for the audition, and I always was I was a Quiet Riot fan, and I loved Frankie's drumming and Chuck's bass playing. So I went down and auditioned, and Frankie was, you know, just it was great. So I got the gig, and we started writing immediately, and then we got about halfway through a record, and we took a break and toured. Went to Japan, played a couple of festivals in Japan and some other cities, and did some real fun stuff over there. And then we did South America. But, you know, they weren't doing well in the States either. It was weird. We couldn't really tour the States with Quiet Riot. So that was kind of strange. So, but I wanted Frankie and Chuck for that Blackthorn thing. I knew that they'd be perfect for that. So.
Right.
And we were all friends and in touch with each other all the time. So they knew what we were doing. And I said, oh, man, you guys got to do this with us. So Bob and I got the songs together, and they were our first choice. So
cool.
It worked out great.
The combination is just phenomenal. But I also saw an amazing revolving door, though. I mean, there's been so many different people that have come and gone over the years, too. The mainstays are what really made the band, and it truly was a super group. And I have to say, I have to ask this also. Now, Island in the Sun, which was a Rainbow song, is just so totally different from what Blackthorn and Alcatraz was doing. I got to ask you, what do you think Graham's preference was, doing Rainbow stuff or doing the heavier stuff?
Well, he generally leans towards the lighter stuff, but Island in the Sun, that song, I wrote that song, and that came from a band called New England.
Wait a minute. Do I get this backwards? I thought that was from Rainbow.
No. You know what? And that's not to say they didn't have a song called Island in the Sun. They may have. On one of the records, not the record that Graham did, but
Oh, I'm sorry.
But the truth, but New England never cut the song. We did the demo. We did a demo of it. I wrote it, wrote all the music, came in. The guys liked it. John wrote some lyrics and melody, and then it never got out of the shoot. We never did anything with it. So I moved to L.A. We started Alcatraz. I played a song for Yngwie and Graham. Yngwie just jumped all over it, and Graham liked it, so away we went. So
yeah.
It was not as heavy. It was not as – it was definitely a poppier thing.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
It was kind of heavy live. Yngwie and I sort of – I don't know, it just seemed to be heavier live. But yeah, it just worked. It was just one of those things that just worked. I don't know.
Yeah.
MTV, they picked it. Yeah,
I couldn't believe
weird.
The difference in the sound, because Island in the Sun is, like you said, more poppy, and the Blackthorn and the Alcatraz stuff is definitely on the harder side, which I love both. Don't get me wrong. You know,
I
love all music. So great.
Yeah.
All great.
I've done.
All great.
You know, I've done all kinds of stuff.
I saw there's a Weezer song, Island in the Sun. It's not a copy, is it?
Not that I know of, no, but there are other Islands in the Sun out there. I mean, you think about it, the name is not
it's
a pretty,
right.
No offense against Graham writing it, but that's just, you know, the song was written about Alcatraz, the island of Alcatraz. So,
right.
Island in the Sun, you know.
Exactly. It could be anything.
But there could
anybody.
Be a Weezer song. Gosh, I don't know.
No, there is. I didn't never heard it, but I know there is one. And I was wondering if it was a copy. So now, after all this time, what made you decide to put this? And this has never been done, by the way, a double album release at the same time. What made you decide to do this now?
Because I love the songs. And Bob and I had talked about this a long time ago before he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I would talk, and we just thought, well, I was bummed out because the record, we thought it was a really good record. We believed in the record, and we loved the songs.
Mm-hmm.
We wrote with some good songwriters on there, and I think the stuff Bob and I wrote was really good and everything. So, you know, we always said, man, it'd be really cool if that stuff could get released someday. So
yeah.
Bob passed away. I was in the middle of an Alcatraz album, producing an Alcatraz record. Our manager was at my house in California, and I was in my garage packing up some stuff, and he says, well, what's this big box, all this Blackthorn stuff?
Mm.
And I said, I don't know. And he started digging around in there and found all these demos, and he put the whole thing together. He got a DAT player and a cassette player, and we had 16-track demos from my original studio where we did this stuff, and got those tapes baked so that they would play okay, and started putting songs together off of it. I wanted to do it just because I was real proud of this stuff, and some of this never saw the light of day.
Right, unfortunately.
And some of these songs I really loved, and I liked the demos. I really like some of the demos a lot. And to be totally honest, some of it was because they had a little bit more keyboards on them than I wrote them like Baby You're the Blood and Love from the Ashes I wrote. So for me, it was kind of cool to put the demo out of those. I really liked that. And I just wanted to see the songs out there, because the truth is, you don't make money on records. There's no money to be made on the record's not going to sell, you know, a million copies,
Tour.
And I'm going to make all this money. So it's only for a personal, just for personal things.
Right.
There's no big advance. There's no nothing. You just
gets
out there, and the label does a fantastic job of packaging. So I'm just real proud of all the songs and the band that we had, and God bless Frankie and Bob.
Yeah, and the demos are fabulous. Everything. The demos are great. The demos are really good. I mean, I didn't get to listen to everything, but, I mean, the songs I picked tonight to play, I hope you're okay with my choices. But
yeah, anything you want.
I mean, you love them all, so I'm sure whatever I pick is going to be fine. But,
absolutely.
The demos are great. The demos are great. So now are you guys,
you
said you're rehearsing right now. Are you guys, what are you doing about obviously promoting the new album release? Is doing you know, interviews, but are you guys getting together to tour? Is that possible?
Yes.
What's going on?
Yeah. Yeah, we have a tour booked in England starting November 11th.
Oh, cool.
We have a festival starting on the 11th, and then we jump off that and do a bunch of dates with Girl School, the band Girl
mm-hmm.
School.
Mm-hmm.
They're friends, and so we're going to work with them, and then we'll jump off that group and do some headline shows, Scotland, Ireland, and what have you, and then come home for Christmas.
And who's in the lineup of the touring band?
It's Joe Stump on guitar, which has been mm-hmm. our guitar player for the last two records,
mm-hmm.
and Gary Shea on guitar,
mm-hmm.
bass guitar, my old mate from New England and original Alcatraz bass player, and Doogie White on vocals, and Mark Bankachea on drums.
Cool.
On this record. So,
I was going to say Doogie was supposed to come on the show, and unfortunately he's in England, and we couldn't arrange a time that would work out. But Doogie was supposed to join us here. I'm working on trying to get him.
No,
I know.
He is.
I know.
Gosh,
I know.
He's
I know.
Really cool.
Yeah.
And
well,
he'd be good.
Yeah, definitely. Now, the album, I think it came out in July, right? July?
The Blackthorn record or Alcatraz?
Yeah.
Alcatraz isn't out yet.
Oh, okay. So it's all Blackthorn that we're listening to tonight.
Yes. Yes.
And now
Blackthorn...
Alcatraz will be out in October, I think, right?
That's correct.
And what's the name of that? Is it V or is it Five?
Five. It's the fifth Alcatraz album. So
right,
that was the big clever, you know, Roman numeral five, fifth record. You know, we thought we were really clever on that one, boy. but the Blackthorn record came out some weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what exact release date was on that. But I was really excited about that because – And it bums me out that Frankie and Bob are gone because Bob would have been flipping out. He would have loved this.
Yeah.
And doing interviews and stuff to support it, he would have loved it.
Right.
So it's really, really too bad, but that's the way life goes.
Yeah. I didn't know why now, why you decided to do it now when these guys aren't here, but you know what? They're hearing it. They're hearing it.
Yeah, they're hearing it, and I just wanted to do it because I'm real proud of it. Like I said, there's no money, so I didn't do it for the money.
Of course.
I'm super proud of it, and it's some work that I'm real proud of. I guess it'd be like an artist. You have a painting, and it's just sitting in your gallery, and in your studio, and it never sees the light of day, and you just love it. You always look at it on the wall for years, and you love it. And it's been to a few galleries, but not much. And then somebody comes along and says, hey, how would you like to put this out worldwide and do the real thing?
Right.
And so people can hear your work, see your work.
Right.
So that's kind of where I'm at with it.
Right. Well, as I mentioned earlier, this is, I believe, the first time there's been a double release of two separate albums. And it is Blackthorn, and the one release is Afterlife and Don't Kill the Thrill. And I'd love to play Don't Kill the Thrill for everybody. I love that. Oh my God, so heavy on there. I'm a
cool.
big bass. I'm a big bass and drum fan. So, this one is just kicking ass. This is on the second CD. It is from the CD Don't Kill the Thrill, and it is the title track. And I love it, and I think you guys are going to enjoy it too. So, Jimmy, I'd love to play it. You want to hear it?
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
This is Don't Kill the Thrill from the album Don't Kill the Thrill by Blackthorn. Check this out. Get ready to rock, man. You're going to dig this. Mm-hmm. Wow, I love the double kick in that. Oh my God.
Oh,
and
cool.
I'm not going to lie to you. I was feeling a little Kevin DeBrow in the vocals early on. I mean, oh man.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Maybe because we're talking Quiet Riot. I don't know. I just felt like it sounded a little, just the vocals sounded like a little bit like Kevin. But my God.
Yeah, I love Kevin. I love that singing because he came from the same, I mean, his influences were my influences. So I loved all the singing. Steve Marriott. There'll never be another Steve Marriott. And I loved, so Kevin was a big Steve Marriott fan, so was I. He and I talked about that. But I hear what you're saying. Yeah.
Mm. Well, a quickie on Kevin, since we're talking about him. I mean, I remember years ago, of course, when, you know, Come On, Feel the Noise was out. Is it true that the version that we heard on the radio was a one-time take? They did it live and that was it?
To be honest, I can't say for sure, but I did an album with Quiet Riot and not with Kevin. But when we recorded, the Pasha Studios and Spencer Proffer, the producer, that's the way the band had always recorded. So we came in the studio, and we were all in the control. The guitar, Carlos, myself, the bass player, and the singer, Paul Shortino, we were in the control room. Frankie Vanelli was in the drum room. And it was 1, 2, 3, play, and hit record. And there were vocals that were kept, and there was bleed on the vocals. There was distortion, and Spencer loved the performance. So a lot of that stuff that we did was live. So I'm not surprised at all. I wouldn't be surprised at all if that was all, or that song was live.
That wouldn't surprise me at all. I had heard that many, many years ago that I think it was their audition, from what I remember. It was their audition for the label, and they recorded it from that. And that's, I don't know if it's true or not. I don't know.
I don't either.
I don't know.
Well, I don't either. And I was with those guys for 3 years and in that studio a lot, doing a record and putting songs together. But nobody ever talked about that. Nobody ever said, you know, they did that. So I don't know.
Yeah,
but I know we, like I said, we were about 80% live, and we went back, and Paul had to replace some vocals because we were in the control room. The mic was live, and it was loud, so there was noise on the mic. I mean, there was distortion and bleed, so a couple of songs, it worked. It just worked, and Spencer said, I'm keeping that vocal. I love the vocal,
right?
And other songs it didn't. He went back and did a new vocal, but... And I overdubbed some keyboards. Carlos maybe did a solo or two, but a lot of that was live.
Now I got
the
to
bass
ask
was
you,
all live.
The titles of the songs that you have. Now obviously they're all heavy. They're all heavy songs. So, like when you come up with the title, I don't know how you write, but I usually come up with a melody first and. You know, then the music comes to it and then title later. So how do you come up with your titles and tell me your writing process?
Well, titles later for us.
Me too.
And typically I'll get a groove in mind. I'm thinking, oh, I'm kind of like this kind of groove. So I'll fool around with in a computer and come up with a drum groove that I like. And then also, or a riff. I'll sit down with the Hammond. I tend to like to work with either piano or B3, and come up with a riff and some chord changes, and then I'll stop once I go, wow, that's cool, I really like that. I'll do a groove. So, and then in this case, Bob Kulick would come over, and I would play him what I had, and he'd like it or not like it. Most of the time, he'd like it, and he'd go, oh man, let me put a guitar on it.
Then
he would put a guitar on it real quick, and then we would listen to it, and then we'd start, and then we'd work, tear it apart and work on the arrangement. But most of these songs went down fairly quickly. Arrangement-wise, we didn't stress out over the arrangement. On a few, we did. But most of them kind of – and you know, you'll know what I'm talking about. They arranged themselves.
Right.
They sort of – once you've got the heart of the song, it just plays itself. You don't have to talk about – you know the chorus is too long or not long enough or the verse or – there's got to be a B section. So, and this section is a perfect B section. So that's obviously what it is. So that's the way a lot of these went down. We Won't Be Forgotten. That was written by Bruce Kulick, Bob Kulick, and Paul Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
And that song, I heard their original demo of that. And that's what we did. We cut it the same exact thing because it was just, that's what the song wanted to be. But like Afterlife, I wrote the song Afterlife and I stressed out over that one. That took some time for me to get happy with the B sections and an instrumental section. And then Bob wanted a solo over a different area that I hadn't even thought about. So we built a solo in and did that thing. But,
now did you guys have
the music first?
Yeah, of course. Did you have, a specific lyricist in the band, or did everybody contribute to lyrics as well when you were?
No, I'm not really a lyricist. I mean, I contribute a little, but Bob had ideas and contributed. And then a very good friend of mine co-wrote a lot of these lyrics. Steven Rosen co-wrote a lot of that stuff for Graham. And then Graham wrote a few things. But it was really mostly Steven and a writer named Steve Plunkett wrote some of this. Baby, You're the Blood, that was my music and Steve Plunkett. And I think Over and Over was Bob and Steve Plunkett. And, gosh, there was two more Plunkett, Skeletons in the Closet with Steve Plunkett's lyrics and melody. Bob and I had written the music. And that's one that we finished this music and just thought, man, this is screaming for a cool lyric and melody.
Right.
We gave it to Steve Plunkett, and he wrote lyric and melody.
Cool.
So, that's the way a lot of these happened.
Right, right. And like you said, once they get started, they write themselves, honestly.
Yeah,
but
speaking
of We Won't Be Forgotten, I would love to play that. I want to make sure we get in a couple of songs before we run out of time. So We Won't Be Forgotten, tell us a little bit about this one. Any story behind it?
Really, not that I know of. And I've had a lot of people ask me that because I don't know what it was about. Paul Taylor and Bruce Kulick wrote the lyrics to that. Bob wrote the music along with those guys. They all contributed the music. I wasn't part of that. So they just came in the studio. Bruce came in and played it for us. We were like, oh, that's amazing. Well, we got to do that. And Bob had co-written it with Bruce and Paul. So I never knew what it was about. And I've had people ask me, Alcatraz played that song live because we love the song. And it went over killer. And after the show, sometimes people would come up and go, I love that song, the chorus. They love the chorus. What's that about, man? That makes me feel so good. And I go, I don't know. I really don't know. I should ask Bruce, actually. I haven't spoken to him in a while, but maybe I'll email him and say, hey, everybody's asking that because I don't know.
And it's got
a good vibe to it, you know.
Yeah,
I think
the version we're going to hear is the actual demo, I think, right? Is that what I have, the actual demo?
There is a demo on there, yes. It says demo 1992.
Yeah, you tell me when we're done if this is the original demo or if it is what was originally released because it's perfect, so I don't know how it could be a demo, but it probably is. So this is We Won't Be Forgotten, and this is also on the Don't Kill the Thrill album. Check it out, folks. Wow. That double kick again. Oh, man, at the end. Oh, it's just a thunderstorm in my heart. I love when my heart pounds from music. I don't know why that wasn't more successful. And if that's the demo, my God, that is fantastic.
No. No, that was the master. That was the album cut.
Nice. I loved it. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, definitely me too. Love that song.
Definitely a great, great chant song. Great chant song.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's what worked live. When we played it live, it worked great. People that never heard it, didn't know anything about it, and we'd play it, and by the second time around, the second chorus, everybody was in. They didn't know what they were singing, but they were in.
And
the Japanese freaked out.
Yeah,
they loved it.
Jimmy, it's funny you say that, because when I was listening to it, that's what I pictured. I pictured the crowd singing along to it and just really getting into it. That's what I pictured. That's why I said it was a great chant song. I could picture an audience, an entire audience just loving that. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was. That was a good one. That was a good
one. Yeah, that's great. So let me ask you this. Now, are you doing new music now with these guys in Alcatraz or no?
It's a whole new record, yeah.
And what's the vein? Is it similar to what we're listening to now or to old Alcatraz?
It's a more modern, heavy, like a power metal kind of thing. It's heavier. But there's a lot of fast songs on it, which we didn't do so much on the last couple of records. I've always wanted to do faster stuff. I tend to write, well, nowadays anyway, I really like fast stuff. I like double bass drum and, quick. As Nigel Glocker from I'm laughing because he's so funny. I can't believe it. Totally escapes me. The drummer. He played on two songs on the new Alcatraz record. Anyway, and we sent him the track, and we said, we want you to play on this. And it was super fast, this one song, ridiculously fast, double bass drum. And he goes, oh, that's a quick one. And then we were laughing. And then the next day he had been in the studio just playing through it, learning it. And he goes, well, the one good thing, I'm losing weight. So it was so funny. And he's not a big guy to begin with, but yeah. So we're doing stuff. The Alcatraz record has more faster driving stuff on it. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear it. Yeah. You better come back and let us play a song or two from that. I would love that.
I would love to.
That'd be great. Well, let's jump over to the Afterlife album and let's play something from there real quick. Now Afterlife. I guess there's no really theme behind any of this stuff. It's just whatever comes out, right?
You know what? Yeah, exactly. We didn't have a theme for the record. It was just. Some of the stuff was darker. Cradle of the Grave, that's a dark one. Song Afterlife is about afterlife. We Won't Be Forgotten is just what you just heard. So, and I'm looking, I'm thinking, Baby, You're the Blood, that's a typical, love song. It's a guy talking about a girl. Sex Crime. Sex Crime was about Jeffrey Dahmer. And Skeletons in the Closet were about Jeffrey Dahmer. So there is bizarre stuff all over it. It's just pick one.
that's why I asked where you got your titles from, because they are definitely heavy metal realm sound with the titles.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They're all over the place, but they're cool. You know what I mean? They fit so perfectly with the songs and the type of music that you're doing, which is, I can't believe we won't Be Forgotten wasn't more popular. I really don't. I just can't get over that.
I know it's very, very strange. That record just didn't do anything at all. And we tried to play live. We played in California. We played some dates up Northern California and just didn't draw flies. People weren't interested in seeing it. So it was just not meant to be, I guess. And our timing was bad. I mean, well, it wasn't our fault. I mean, Bob and I had wanted to put a band together for years. And we met in New York in 1978 when I lived in New York and he was from New York. So we met at a Kiss show in 78. And then we just, we thought, man, we got to do something. We just stayed in touch. And then this is what we did. This was our first record together.
Cool.
So
well,
we weren't thinking about grunge, no grunge. We just wanted to do a record.
Just music, man. Just music. Now, speaking of, before we go into the song now that you mentioned how long you've been playing, I mean, what was your first keyboard you had or piano? And when you got, I'm guessing you learned on piano and then got a keyboard. What was your reaction to an electric piano keyboard?
Well,
when you know?
The first thing that I learned on piano, just a typical 12-year-old kid taking piano lessons, which I hated and didn't. I loved the piano. I hated the lessons. And I was lazy. I didn't want to practice. So the first keyboard that I got after that, because I was playing guitar in the band. And then I was taking piano lessons, but I was still a guitar player in the band in high school. And then we had a Farfisa organ.
I love Farfisa.
And that's when I really started, really got into the playing the organ, Farfisa. And then, but we wanted a Hammond, ultimately. We had to have a Hammond. So we got a Hammond Spinet, an L, and Leslie. And then that was it for me. I never looked, and then it was like I had to have a B3. I'd go to the music store and just stand there in front of a B3 and Leslie and just drool. I'd look in the window at night. They'd be closed, and I'd look at the B3 in the window, and I just had to have a Hammond. So it really, my first, were organs, were Farfisa and then Hammond, and Hammond Leslie's. And I'm still, my original B3 is here, and my original Leslie from 30 years ago is what I recorded. I mean, it's been modified, but it's still, that's what's here in my studio. And that's what I make records with. So that's my go-to stuff. I have everything else. I've had Moogs and Arps, and I have every piece of software known to man. So and I use all of it. I mean, I love Mellotrons. I have an original Mellotron that I bought that came to this country in '68.
Oh wow!
I still have it.
Wow.
I don't use it because it's a pain in the ass. I can use software Mellotrons that sound identical, and the recordings are perfect, so I use that. But Hammond was my go-to thing. You know, a really dirty Hammond sound is what I always liked.
And when you were younger, what type of music were you into at the time when you realized this is what I want to do? And when did you realize this is what I want to do?
I guess I was about 16 and I started, sort of had a band when I was over like 14 and we didn't know what we were doing. I was playing guitar, but it was horrible, you know, but we were playing Animals songs and blues songs. We played, Beatles and Stones and then, some Ray Charles. The keyboard player, we had a keyboard player in that band. It was older than us, and he was an incredible blues player. And so we did some really hardcore blues stuff that he could really wail on, and he was a great singer. So got into that. And then, but my biggest influences, when I hit 15, 16, it was The Who, Led Zeppelin, and The Beatles.
What was the first concert you went to?
That was probably the first big concert was, this is funny, Herman's Hermits, and Neil Diamond, Paul Revere and the Raiders. It was what they called a cavalcade of stars. And there must have been like, oh my God, there must have been like 10 acts on the bill. And each band
like
played,
that.
Yeah, they played maybe 20 minutes, you know, kind of thing. And of course we'd heard their records. So, I think that was the very first real concert I went to in like a hockey rink in West Virginia, where I grew up. And, you know, held probably about 5,000-6,000 people. And I'll never forget, Neil Diamond came on stage. He had no band. He just played acoustic guitar. And I'll never forget it. All the hits that the other bands had, and everybody loved them, when Neil Diamond played those songs, the place went mental. It was like the Beatles. And there is the power. There is the power of a song right there. Neil Diamond, to me, is just one of the best songwriters that's ever been on the planet. You know, God. And that's old school. He is. That's the real deal. And one of my best friends has worked for Neil for 30 years. I've never met him, but Bernie's talked about him. But, yeah, so that concert, that was a real eye-opener for me because I heard those songs, and I knew who Neil Diamond was even as a kid. We'd heard those hits on the radio. And but seeing him walk out there with an acoustic guitar and play for 20 minutes and kill it, that really started making me realize it's not about having a Hammond and a Leslie and having all this. That's when I started to wake up to songwriting. Like, hey, I think this is where it's at. And then I saw rented some gear, actually, to the Four Seasons. They played in North Carolina where I was living later. And I was about 16, 17. And I remember talking to Bob Gaudio, the keyboard player and the writer. He wrote all that stuff and was the producer. Amazing guy. And Bob, I talked to him. They played at a college there. We rented him some gear. So Bob and I just hung out and talked. He was a fantastic guy. And he just said, it's all about the song. He goes, you guys, whatever genre of music you're into, whatever your influences, all that's great. But concentrate on your songwriting. He just hit me over the head with that over and over. And so he went back to New York. We were in North Carolina. I sent him demos of our band. He said, send me demos. I'll help you. So we sent him demos, and I said, we want to move to New York. We want to get into business. We want to move to New York and live in Manhattan, man. We want to live it, you know. And he told me, he says, I said, you guys are not good. These demos are terrible. These songs are terrible. You've got to get better. You can't, you're not going to survive in this business up here in New York with these songs. And he goes, I'm just being honest. He goes, I'll listen to songs as long as you send them to me. Keep sending them. But I'm just telling you guys aren't, you're not good enough yet. And he said, and he kept saying, I don't say that harshly. I like you, you know, really enjoyed meeting you and everything. And, but that really made a huge impression on me. And, I haven't seen him in forever. And I always wanted to tell him that, you know?
Coming from him, I mean, he's a great songwriter himself. I mean, he wrote so many fantastic, great pop songs, you know, and you know, he would know, and for him to tell you, I mean, like you said, he wasn't being a jerk off. He was, you know, trying to help you out.
No, he was being totally cool. And Frankie Valli is sitting there. We'd all been playing basketball in the gym that afternoon after their sound check. So Frankie Valli was really cool. So we're all sitting in the dressing room, all sweaty from playing basketball. And Frankie Valli, I was talking to Bob, and Frankie Valli heard me talking to Bob. And Frankie goes, yep, that's the guy with all the money right there. He wrote all the songs. He goes, that's what you want to do. You want to be like him, not me. He said, I'm just a singer. He said, that's the guy right there.
Right.
And he was just, he goes, singing, anybody can sing it. He said, but nobody, not everybody can write it.
Exactly. Right. That's
and
true.
So
it's
I was lucky. I got hit over the head with song. I'll be a good songwriter, you know, early on.
Right.
And it made a big impression on me.
Nice. Now, when
here we are.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm done.
I was going to say, when you guys are touring, are you going to be playing any of the Blackthorn stuff or just Alcatraz stuff?
No, it's just Alcatraz. Blackthorn is...
Throw some Blackthorn in there.
Well, we got, you know, these guys, we've written a lot of material, and people want to hear that original Alcatraz record. They want to hear a lot of stuff off of that. And then Doogie, The Rainbow record that Doogie was on was a big record for Rainbow. So they want to hear, there's a couple of songs in particular they want to hear off that. And Michael Schenker, he was with Michael Schenker, a couple of hits off of that they want to hear. So when you start adding it up, it's like, okay, and then we've got new Alcatraz to play. And then we've got Alcatraz off the last Alcatraz record. And then there's a song we're playing off the second Alcatraz. So, yeah, there's just no room. We got 90 minutes of music, and we had to cut some new material out of the set.
No,
we just don't have enough.
He'd be performing 24 hours if you did everything.
Well, yeah, it'd be crazy because 90 minutes, the promoters, that's kind of all they want. They want you have to play 90 minutes, but they don't want it much longer because they're running maybe two acts and they have curfews and all this stuff. And in Japan, you know, it's funny, the promoter that promotes us over there, she's really cool. She's a friend, and we've done three tours for her. Last time we played 2.5 hour shows because she requested all this music off all these different records that we had all been involved in.
Right.
And We Won't Be Forgotten being one of the songs. So one night we were on stage playing and we were hitting the 2.5 hour mark. She's off in the wings giving me the kill it. She says, too much, too much, too much. So, we went out to dinner and I was laughing with her and I said, wow, I cannot believe we're in Japan and you didn't want us to play anymore. And she goes, it's the law. It's the curfew. The theater's not, we can't be here. She goes, no, you could play all night. She goes, we would have had to start an hour earlier. So that's what we run into with Alcatraz on the road. I mean, is they just run out of town. They got to close the place down. So
yeah, is Graham still doing his Alcatraz version or no?
I have no idea, to be honest. I haven't talked to Graham in 2 years. So I just don't know what he's doing.
Yeah, no, I was just curious if both of you were going at the same time, you know, touring. I mean, I'd much rather see you.
Well, I appreciate that. I know he was very much into the Graham Bonnet Band, which is his girlfriend is the bass player and an old friend of his that we had played with when I joined the Graham Bonnet Band originally, Conrado, great guitar player. And I don't know who's going to play drums and keyboards, but that's the last I heard. Graham was really, he's doing a solo record and he wants to do that band. So
there you go.
I don't know.
Right. Well,
there's room out there for everybody.
Exactly. You know. Exactly. So let's play Afterlife because we're doing our Afterlife with our new version of Alcatraz. And do the Afterlife here, and this is off of which one is this? This is from the Afterlife album, obviously.
Yeah, from the Afterlife album, yes.
Yep. For Blackthorn. Yep, here we go. Afterlife.
Okay, thank you.
Check it out.
Yeah.
Another locomotive coming through my living room. Each song is just more powerful than the next. They're just fabulous. Oh my! Could you imagine if I was able to turn these up? Oh my God, my pictures would fall off the wall.
Thank you so much for your compliments. I really makes me feel good. It makes me feel like, well, that's the reason I wanted this out there.
Yeah,
so people could hear it.
Yeah,
it's so great that you're playing this like that. That's fantastic.
Oh no, I'm loving every minute of it. It's so funny, Jim. I when I get music to play, I like to listen to it for the first time, like everybody else that's listening in. So, but I just listen to like maybe the first maybe four bars of the songs, and then I pick which ones, and then I get to enjoy it with everybody at the same time when we're listening live. And I'm telling you, they're just blowing me away, each one. And each one is just
so
more
cool.
powerful than the next. And again, I still can't believe that there hasn't been more behind these in airplay and just popularity of them. I mean, I just can't believe there wasn't more of that behind these. I mean, because there is an audience for this type of music. So
absolutely.
What happened to them? Where are you, people? Where are you?
Yeah, it's weird. I my dentist here in Chicago, I go to the dentist and she's working on me, and there's her assistant is this young girl, probably, I don't know, she's probably 22, 23 maybe, and she's real quiet, you know, and just this, she's a dental assistant, you know, and so she's, I'm just talking to her, you know, and we're talking, and she's really kind of shy and everything, and she goes, so you play in a band, right? And I said, yeah. And she goes, and what's the name of your band? I said, Alcatraz.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, oh, that's really cool. I really like that band. And I thought she was being nice. You know, I said, I said, that's great. I said, that's hard to believe that you're into that kind of music. I thought maybe, you know, you would be into something else. She goes, no, I'm a huge metalhead.
Yep. I was going to say she's a metalhead.
And she starts rattling off all these bands. So they're out there. It's just that there's not enough of them to support it the way it needs to be supported for bands to go out and tour and you know, make a living doing it. But
they're
out there. There's people out
there. No, I know.
This, so.
The thing is, I think they enjoy it in the privacy of their homes now instead of going to concerts. You know, that's what it is. We've gotten older, unfortunately, and some of us can't get out like as we used to, you know.
Yeah, no, that's the truth. I mean, in England, I'm surprised that some of the shows, there's people there that are 25 years old. Especially the festivals, you look out in the crowd and it's daytime and you can see everybody, and there's people there that are 70 years old, and there are people there that are 20 years old standing right next to each other, and this guy's getting into these songs and these kids are getting into those songs, and so it's just kind of weird here in the States. When we did play here a couple of years ago, we drew nobody, but the people that were there were just we had some, maybe 10 people at some of these shows that really were into it, that knew the music. And the rest of them were just there to have a beer. You know, they didn't really care who was playing.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the songs that I'm hearing, I could swear that they could fit like a video game soundtrack that the kids are playing.
Yes. Yeah,
you know, I hear it. I just hear it because my son, when he was playing, what was he used to play? Oh my God, Grand Theft Auto. I remember hearing, this type of music in there, and you know, that's a good way to get the kids into it nowadays too.
Yeah, and it's tough getting it placed in films or commercials or video games. It's tricky because. There's a composer usually there's a composer that does the music for the, like Grand Theft Auto was a lot of songs because Alcatraz had a song in Grand Theft Auto, one of them, off the second album.
No kidding.
God Bless Video.
No, you know, I must have heard it because I'm hearing this. I'm hearing it. I'm hearing it now. So I must have heard it when he was playing it. I definitely feel it from when he was playing it.
Yeah, it was when Steve Vai was in the band.
Another great.
Yeah, great musician, great guitar player, mm-hmm. great guy.
Mm-hmm.
But that got placed in Grand Theft Auto, and which I would have never guessed in a million years. But that was a Steve Vai connection. Steve knew somebody that knew somebody, and it connected that way. So it's tough. It's, you know, a lot of people ask me about that. They go, oh man, I want to get my songs in films. You know, this song's perfect for a film. Well, you may think it's perfect for a film,
right?
But I've written so much stuff and submitted it to some heavy duty film, music supervisors and stuff. It all comes down, and I've watched it happen. I've been in the studio, and a director will come in, and the music supervisor has cut it to picture and is letting it's playing to picture as it goes by. And the director goes, "Nah, I don't like that. I don't like, take that piece, put the other piece back in there." And he doesn't care if it's Led Zeppelin or who it is. He's just like, that's not working for me.
Right.
And people think just because you write the song and you're all excited about it, you know that, and you know this, you're a songwriter, and you get attached to it and you think, how could they not put that in the movie?
Exactly.
And it's
right.
just, but nowadays the politics are heavy duty to get a song in a big movie anyway. I mean, they want Beyonce, or they want Kelly Clarkson, or they want Taylor Swift, or they want, you know, Bruno Mars, or, and all those people are fantastic. So it's not like, who are those people, you know? I mean, when you're talking about, the competition is insane.
Right.
So
I know.
Very
and
hard.
A lot of times,
very hard.
Yeah, and a lot of times it's not what you do and what, you know, what you know. It's who you know sometimes, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well,
absolutely.
Look at how Steve Vai was the one that kind of put the Grand Theft Auto thing together. So there you go, right?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Jimmy, we've got time for one more song, and my choices were Judgment Day or Paralyzed. Which one would you like us to play?
Oh, boy. Judgment Day.
Judgment Day? All right, so Judgment
Day,
nothing behind that one. No stories at all, nothing. Was it written about someone or?
Nope. That's one that's just somebody came up with that idea. I'm trying to think who wrote the lyric to that. It wasn't Graham. That, I'm not sure who that was. That wrote that one.
Well,
I
can't
wait.
To
refresh my memory.
Well, I can't wait to play it for everybody. And this is Judgment Day. And this one is also off of the Don't Kill the Thrill album. And again, this is Blackthorn. Check it out, Judgment Day.
I see the water driving.
Wow, excellent choice. I'm glad you picked that one. That was great. You know, if I wasn't in so much pain, my head would be thrashing and my horns would be up. Oh, my God. I'd be banging. I'd be banging over here if I could move my body.
Oh,
oh man,
funny.
I love it. Love it. I have a really stupid question for you. Each song I'm hearing, I got to ask you this stupid question. When you guys play live, who came off the most tired and the sweatiest after playing all night these songs?
The drummer.
no
Frank,
shit.
Frankie. Yeah, that was just kicking his ass.
Yeah, well,
just
with all the double kick drums, oh my God, he must look like he's running back there.
Yeah, there's a lot of double kick that he's doing. A lot of that's done on single kick. Frankie played that on single kick.
Oh,
he had a double pedal. But
yeah,
a lot of that was just one kick, not a double pedal or not a double kick drum. So he just got a good foot.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said,
yeah.
Stupid question. It was just curiosity that I had to ask.
No, that's
songs.
Fine.
Because, you know, when you're in concert, you extend them even longer. So, you know. So.
Yep. Yeah. A lot of these, if we'd have been out, be able to play, we didn't do that many shows, but I could see it happening. Some of these songs are really coming alive, and we're like, oh, man, this is going to be great when you take that section out and take this section out.
Mm.
But we just, there was no support for the band out there. So we played, there was nobody there. So the booking agents were like, sorry, guys, can't book you. So
that sucks.
We didn't do much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Well, I really wanted to talk a lot more about you and your career and all the great guys that have been in and out of the band, but I really wanted to play a lot of that music, too. So I'm so sorry if we took most of the time playing music.
I'm so glad. Thank you so much. And y'all come on again. We'll do this again.
Oh, I'd love to. When Five comes out, definitely. But let everybody know where they can get Afterlife and Don't Kill the Thrill, the Blackthorn album. Where can they get that now?
Everybody tells me, the label says Amazon is the best, most sure place to get it right away.
Yeah.
But if there is such a thing, your local music store, like here in Chicago, there's some old school music stores that are pretty big, actually, that sell record stores. And you can go in there. And I called one, Beverly Records, and I called him and I said, this is crazy. Do you have that record? The guy knew exactly what I was talking about. And he goes, yeah. He says, I don't know if we have any. I'll have to go look. But and I said, no, don't bother. I just want to know. I'm just curious. But he said, yeah, if we don't have it, I can get it.
Right.
It's distributed.
Right.
He said, it's in the system.
Right.
So it's out there if your favorite record store. And you know what's weird? Now I'm starting to hear people talk about that again, like their record stores. And that's blown my mind. And
Thank God.
This guy turned me on to this place in Chicago. He said, we were talking about Amazon. You know, Amazon owns the world, runs the world. And he goes, I bought this vinyl of his favorite band, whoever it was, and a new record. And I went, wow, you didn't get that on Amazon? He goes, no, I got it at Beverly Records. And it's this old school record store that's in Beverly, outside of Chicago. It's about 20 minutes from me. And I haven't been there yet. I'm dying to go there. And they have 45s. They have LPs, CDs. They have everything.
Nice.
So
I know they need to bring them back.
You can do that.
They need to bring them back.
So you can do that. You can go into one of those stores and get it. It's available.
Right. Now, is there anything special about the albums themselves? Is it vinyl? Are there liner notes? Or is it CDs? Or is it both? Anything extra special?
No vinyl yet. From my understanding is they're going to do vinyl, but I don't know that for sure. That's the last I heard. There's a lot of cool stuff on the liner notes. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
So
they're actually CDs. I don't know why, but I was picturing you had vinyl as well. I don't know. I guess because it's just great music.
Once, years ago, they did some little vinyl 45s that were like, that would fit in a CD case. And it didn't work. I mean, it didn't catch. So
yeah,
but I think they're going to do 12-inch of this. That's my understanding. So I'll have to check into that. But I think there's going to be vinyl LPs of these.
Cool. That would be great. Because then you have real liner notes and the real deal, you know, like the old days,
exactly.
A real album in your hand, you know?
Oh, man. So. Something in your hand you can read and you can see people's faces. And yeah, it's pretty amazing. Yeah, exactly.
You can hold it in your hands and flip it over 20 times and still see something new. You know, you flip it back and forth and still catch something new on it. Now, Jimmy, if anybody wanted to reach out to you or find out more information about you, where could they go? Do you have a website?
Gosh, I don't, actually.
What?
Facebook. Yeah, I don't have a website. No, just Facebook would be probably the best way right now. I'm doing a website as we speak. I have somebody working on one. I had one for years. And I wasn't maintaining it, and I let the URL lapse. I had jimmywaldo.com, and somebody got it. And, you know, those people that they just get a bunch of websites, and then they want to sell it to you and make money.
Exactly.
So I haven't had one in a couple of years. I just doing Facebook. And I'm not a big Facebook guy, but I get messages. So people, you know, message me through Facebook, which I get on Messenger. And so that's the best way to get in touch with me.
Well, I'm going to reach out to you. I'm going to reach out to you. You better accept my friend request.
I will. Absolutely.
I didn't know you were on
absolutely.
Facebook. I would have got you sooner. I would have reached out sooner.
Well,
you could have saw the promo I did. I put together a promo and put it on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter.
I will go look. I'm sorry.
Don't worry.
I just spend so much time practicing and doing music. I just don't do Facebook like people do Facebook typically. I have a page, but so you can find me on Facebook, and I will get a message.
Right.
So, yes.
Well,
absolutely.
My God, thank you so much. Everybody, Jimmy Waldo. Go check it out. The new album, it's from Blackthorn. It's new. I got to keep saying plural. Albums. Afterlife, Don't Kill the Thrill. It's two albums, folks, not one. When you buy this, you're getting two, not one. And, man, there's got to be how many songs total on here? I don't know. What do you got?
Oh, there's
geez.
35.
35 songs 35. To OD on rock. Man.
Total. Yeah, you definitely OD.
Yep.
By the
exactly.
time you get through song 35, if you should be OD'd by then. Absolutely.
Exactly. Well, everybody check it out. Hopefully Jimmy will come back when the new album comes out with Alcatraz number 5. I'd love to see get to play that for you and have a great time.
Absolutely.
And we'll talk more about you.
Well, thank you. And I would love to do it. So
excellent.
Anytime.
You got
anytime.
It. Jimmy, thank you so much. Everybody, Jimmy
thank
Waldo,
you, Joanne.
Go check out the new album. Thank you, Jimmy. Bye-bye. Take
thank
care,
you,
honey.
Joanne.
Thank you.
Thank
what
you
a great
so much.
Pleasure. Thank you, sir. Have a good evening.
You're welcome. You
okay,
too.
Okay, honey.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Oh, boy, I ran short on time. There was more songs to play, too. But, man, when you're talking about a super group, I mean, the musicians that are in there, just phenomenal. You heard the music. I mean, I don't have to say, you know. Anyway, real quick, join us on the 12th when we welcome pop singer Shema. And that's Sunday, the 12th at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. I'm running out of time, folks, but I am so sorry. We had a great time, and Jimmy said he'll come back, which is great. So when his new album comes out in I think it's October or November, I apologize, I forgot the month now, but the new album is V for the Roman numeral symbol 5, and that is Alcatraz. So you just heard all the music tonight of Blackthorn. How cool is the new album? Have a good night. Take care. AplauseRadioShow.com. Love you guys. It is Wednesday. You know what? I'm going to end this if you can still hear me. I'm going to end it with the song we didn't get to play, which was Paralyzed. So if you can hear me, we're going to close this out with Paralyzed. And this is also by Blackthorn. And Paralyzed is also off of the Don't Kill the Thrill album. Take care, folks. Thank you, Jimmy. Jimmy Waldo, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah!